All right, folks. Happy Halloween to each and every one of you. That'll do. Ladies and gentlemen, our program will begin with a brand new song that deals with the delicate subject of drug abuse and how it can damage your consciousness to the point where you, just like the character in this song, may be led to seek gratification in a Greyhound bus depot near a locker and or located somewhere by the 33rd seat, which is right in proximity to the doo-doo room on the bus. The name of that song is Pygmy Twilight.
Howdy folks, this is Scott Parker and you're listening to episode number 41 of the ZappaCast for October of 2019. And who do we have on the program today? Let's see. Step up, sir, and identify yourself.
Vaultmeister in attendance.
Hi, Joe.
How's it going?
It's definitely going. It's getting a little cold and I have allergies and all that shit, but it's going. How's things over there? Busy.
Same deal. Isn't it interesting how on the East Coast people get colds and allergies and stuff like that, and then on the West Coast, the same deal, and we're so far away, but it's all happening at the same time. It's so weird.
Well, you don't have the change of the seasons over there like we do, do you? So.
Well, actually, it kind of has gotten colder here. It's not as cold as over there probably, but it does get cooler at night, so yeah. I think it's a simultaneous change.
Yeah, I think so. Well, you've been kind of home for a while, right? The tour's over. It's been over for a little while, and
yeah.
You've had time to recoup. So what did you think of the hologram tour? How was that experience?
Oh, it was great.
Yeah,
it was really wonderful. It was really great to play that music with those guys, you know, the guys.
Mm-hmm.
It was a dream come true for sure for me, and to just be a part of something so historical, and it was really great to see something that Amit was very excited about and had so much to do with, and I was glad to see it through and be successful, and looking forward to future
yeah.
stuff with that.
Is there anything that you can tell our listeners at home about what the future might hold? Is there anything to tell right now?
No, not really. I'm sure that it's safe to say that there'll probably be more stuff in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about all that I can really do and say right now about it. I do hope that is true, because it's too good of a show.
Yeah.
For it to not happen. So, yeah, we'll just have to see. We'll just see what happens.
Hey, I enjoyed my shows. I thought they were, you know, the band was amazing. I don't know how anybody could really argue with it. I thought it was a great time.
Yeah, it's a media overload for sure. But, I mean, there really isn't anything like it.
No.
And as far as hologram technology goes, I mean, I keep saying this about the prediction. I feel that it's going to be a day very soon where, you know, there's just going to be so it's going to be so common
mm-hmm.
to see hologram shows, you know, like it won't be far-fetched to see, you know, hologram versions of the Monterey Pop Festival at a residency
wow.
at the MGM Grand in Vegas for a month or something like that. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
I just feel like that kind of stuff is right around the corner. And I also think that there is a market for such a thing. I mean, who wouldn't want to go see the Beatles play at the Aria in Las Vegas for a month or something? You know,
yeah.
I think that would be a lot of fun. And
I'd
so,
go.
yeah. And there's generations past us that will want to have that experience, and of course they could never without it. So I just think that the hologram thing as a thing is something that in the future is going to become more common and more accepted, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't think it could have gone any better, at least from my perspective. And then you did the shows at the Baked Potato later and at the Whiskey.
Yes. And yes, that stuff was, you know, I just came up with the ideas like, listen, while we're waiting around for word on what we could possibly be doing with the Hologram, let's play locally if everybody was up for it. And they were, and the shows went really, really great, and everybody was super happy about it, and we're going to do it again.
Are you?
So that's good. Yeah, we're going to do it again. I can't say exactly when, but it's going to be happening soon, so stay tuned.
Yeah, watch the skies, folks.
Yeah.
People came from far and wide, didn't they, to see those shows? So, yeah, I mean, I'm glad that people out on the West Coast got to see that band, because it's a hell of a band.
For sure.
Yeah. And you've come home and have been swallowed up almost entirely with all kinds of projects. And the one that we're here to talk about is
Halloween 73.
Ah.
You know, it is October, and pretty soon we're going to be getting into that Halloween spirit. And it's always a fun time of the year. It's one of my favorite holidays for sure. It's really, over the years now, it's started to become more and more my favorite holiday of the year. Christmas used to be, but it's not the same anymore for me. So I think Halloween is just, it can just be a total blast with the right circumstances. And I used to really enjoy it when I was a kid. And so, and of course, being a Zappa fan, Halloween is always so special.
Yep.
And this year we've got, you know, a project that honestly was a surprise. Here's the story. I got to tell you this. It's okay. Just hilarious because, you know, we moved the vault. The vault moved from the house to the place where it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And things obviously are not in the same order as they were. I mean, I'm doing the best to keep them all together and stuff. It's not horrible. It's not like shit scattered everywhere. But,
sure.
But I had forgotten that the 1973 Halloween shows were in the vault. I totally forgot about that.
Oh, really?
I had run across those tapes back in the 90s. And for some reason, I had gotten in my head that that we didn't have that show in the vault. And then, lo and behold, I found them again. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I forgot about this. I forgot that 73 was in here, because 74, 75, 76 is not in there, you know. I really thought that 73 wasn't either, but it is. And so it was real exciting. So we made this the next installment in the Halloween series. And it sure is special shows, that's for sure.
Yeah. Is this the point where Halloween becomes Halloween, as we know, for Frank, or does that kind of happen in 74 when he starts doing the Halloween shows in New York City?
Well, I think, you know, there was a Halloween show in 1972.
There was.
So I think that it might have been starting around there. I think there was in 71, too, but we don't have it.
Yeah.
I can't remember, actually, if there is one in 71.
I think there is.
So 72 is when I think the tradition really officially starts, but not like we know and love it, you know, in the New York area.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Mother's Day and Halloween were always two holidays that Frank was usually playing shows on.
Mm-hmm.
And, so Halloween, yeah, 1972 probably was the start of it. And then New York became the home for the Halloween shows, which is an interesting thing, because when you listen to the early tapes of the Mothers of Invention at the Fillmore,
yeah,
or even like with the Flo and Eddie Mothers, not just the 60s Mothers, but the Flo and Eddie Mothers, the New York audiences were, I mean, they weren't the easiest audience to play for. They were loud and kind of disrespectful sometimes.
Yep.
Not that other cities weren't, because concert goers back in the early 70s just seemed to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just real party atmosphere, constantly screaming out what they want, you know, all that stuff. And, well, shit, man. I mean, even the audience tapes that you can hear, even the audience in the New York Palladium shows in 76 were kind of like that too, you know, a little bit. They just get rowdy, you know.
Yeah.
But for some reason, Frank, instead of being, you know, mean back to them, had a turn for the better towards New York audiences and started to have a better camaraderie or a better relationship with them. And obviously, by the time Baby Snakes happened, I mean, it was just like over the top. It was off the chart, you know?
Yeah.
So 74 was the first time where Frank played Halloween in New York, and then it just kind of started to blossom, really. I think things started changing. But this is interesting because we're in Chicago at the Auditorium Theater in 1973.
Mm-hmm.
Two shows in one night. And it's the second city of a new tour with a new band. So pretty legendary.
Not only is it a new band, but it's that band, the Roxy Band.
Yes.
Yep.
Exactly.
So where is the band at in terms of the repertoire and everything, second date of the tour? Are you getting, like, material that would be dropped later and, you know, stuff like that, or become scarce, rather?
The stuff is in, there's different arrangements than how it ended up actually turning out a couple months later at the Roxy.
Mm-hmm.
Or not even a couple months. Like, I think it was like 6 weeks later or something like that. Yeah, 6 weeks. But, you can hear early versions and early arrangements of Penguin in Bondage, stuff like that, which is really cool. And the Bebop Tango was still a part of Farther Oblivion and not removed and isolated like it was in the Roxy.
Yep.
There's definitely differences in the repertoire, even in the arrangements of the songs that we know and love from the Roxy, like Dickie's Such an Asshole, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
There's extra stuff in these performances that we're not used to hearing, so that's going to make this release special in that way. It won't be just like hearing the same stuff over and over, so that's good. And hearing the double drummer thing in its infancy and how they were working together right away is pretty cool. And obviously, Napoleon Murphy Brock being brand new to the scene.
Yep. That's a huge, you know, that was a huge thing because for the last, that was the first time since Flo and Eddie that Frank had a lead vocalist.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Earlier on in 73, he was definitely, you could tell that he was definitely experimenting with the possibility of having a vocalist in the band, but he never really found the right person. I mean, Ricky Lancelotti was not somebody that he could rely on, obviously.
No.
And when they were over in Australia in the summertime, you know, they were kind of jamming a little bit with Ken Vassey.
Yeah, Ken Vassey.
And that didn't happen either. So, I mean, I think that it was something that was in Frank's head, like he really did want to try and find somebody eventually, and Napoleon ended up being that person.
Yeah, I don't think Frank really ever wanted to be the lead singer of the band, really. He had to be at times, and there were certain songs where it just sounded better coming from him, but I don't think he ever really wanted to be the front man, at least until, you know, probably post-Mothers.
You know, it's funny. When I was first discovering the music of Frank, I was really only interested in the stuff that he was singing.
Really?
Yeah. And then, of course, as I got older and wiser and more exposed to the rest of the catalog, I mean, it was hard for me to get it all at once because it's not like today. You know, all that stuff was out of print, and I was getting albums one by one through used record shops.
Just like
in cities outside of mine because I lived in such a small city. Mm-hmm. So it was a long time coming, but yeah, I was really just wanting to hear Frank sing. But so I like it when Frank sings, but as we all know, as history will show, there has been some great singers in the band for sure.
Yeah, you got to sing, or you got, well, to sing and play with one on the Hologram tour.
Yeah, probably one of the best singers that he had for sure. And such an amazing person too.
Yeah, Ray White. He, you know, I have to say, when I saw when I was there for Friends and Family Night, when he sang The Evil Prince, it was just like, I literally had tears in my eyes. I'm not afraid to admit it. It was
Yeah. We're living in a time where those guys can still be together and still play that music, and it's not going to last forever.
Nope.
And so to get the opportunity to, you know, see this music that we listen to so much, that's a part of our lives, to see it being sung by the same people and played by the same people, mm-hmm. is an opportunity that is not going to be there forever. So yes, it is special. It's really special.
That's it. I don't know why anybody would think otherwise. It's those guys, you know, so.
Yes.
So how does this project, I mean, you know, this project came kind of, for a lot of people, out of nowhere. Is it part of a continuing, you know, is the thought to do as many Halloween projects as you can? Because I know
Absolutely.
You're missing, you're missing a fair amount of the years, right?
No, we've got opportunities to do future box sets, so, and we will.
Yeah.
We will.
So that stuff is coming. Also, I didn't want to do anything else without talking about Orchestral Favorites, which came out a couple months ago. And
awesome.
It is, as John Sebastian would say, it's a mindfucker of all times, man. I think it's it's brilliant. And what amazes me is that Frank only recorded one of the shows at the Royce Hall. I can't get over that.
Yeah, I can't. Me neither. You would have thought for sure that he would have recorded both, but we just don't know. I mean, maybe he only had the machine available for one night.
Could
you
be.
Know, who knows? So, yeah. And also, it's a real bummer that the Captain Beefheart guest section wasn't captured.
Yeah.
I'm very surprised that the engineer didn't roll on another roll of tape, but maybe he ran out of tape. Who knows?
Could be. It wasn't so long that they shouldn't have had another roll of tape, but who knows? I mean, we'll probably never know the answer to that. It is out there on cheesy audience tapes.
Yes.
But in the case of the Royce Hall shows, the audience tapes are extremely cheesy, so, you know, it's just really nice to have that available in such pristine quality, folks.
Absolutely.
Not to mention the vinyl.
Finally, really, I think, got the attention that it deserves for its anniversary. Because, I mean, it is the anniversary of when it was released, not when it was recorded, of course. But I think that it was a sin that record ended up having the life that it did when Warner Brothers got a hold of it. And I'm glad that we were able to kind of... put it in the spotlight again all this time and give it the respect that it deserves, because there's not that many opportunities out there where Frank got to work with that large of a group.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, just the opportunity to hear some of his orchestral work too, you know, would, you know, it's important to have that stuff out there as well.
Yes. Absolutely.
You know.
And obviously we know that Frank didn't release anything from those concerts. And he probably felt that, you know, the music wasn't represented to the best of its ability. But I think that when you listen to it, if you just realize, you know, that obviously it can be a little loose in spots, but I really came off of those, listening to those tapes, with a fulfilled feeling. Like, I thought, this is really historical, and Frank's in a great mood, and his raps before the songs are really amazing, and the experimental nature of the entire concert comes through, and I think that for history's sake, that it was worth putting out. I don't think it's good to put out crappy performances just for the sake of putting it out there. I don't think it's going to do the legacy any justice by, you know, choosing crappy performances. If we can fix it, we will, and we'll make it right. But honestly, I didn't find that performance at Royce Hall to be to the point of... I've been reading a little bit of criticism from some certain fans, if you want to call them fans out there, that are like, you know, Frank would have never released this. It's an atrocity. These performances are not up to par, and all that. I don't agree with that. You know, no. I think those performances are there. They did have enough rehearsal to do it, and you know, Frank obviously being a stickler. Mm-hmm. But I think just like again, just for history's sake, and also because it really there's a good feeling from those performances and from those. From the stuff on those tapes, so I felt like it would work.
I think it definitely does. I don't really understand anybody saying that, because the performances for me actually were better than I expected, because I'd been used to listening to those crappy audience tapes forever. So,
sure.
You know, with an ensemble of that size, you're not going to have an optimal performance necessarily, but I don't know that that's the point. The feel is there. You know, Frank seems to be enjoying himself, and I think it's perfectly valid. And it's the closest thing you're going to get to a documentary type release for that album. That, you know, it is basically
for
orchestral favorites. Yeah. I was very pleased. You did good.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I thought that it really turned out great. I love the mix, and I love the performances. I love the packaging. It's amazing that we were able to find pictures of the, you know, the actual performance. And I feel the same way about Halloween 73, that we actually have pictures from that exact night.
Oh, included in the book?
Yes.
Wow.
I'd say it's pretty cool.
The packaging is similar to the Halloween 77 box.
Right. And we're going to be doing CDs this time instead of a USB stick, because we were able to, it's because of the amount of music, you know. Yeah. So because there's two shows and a disc of rehearsals thrown in there, which is just so fun to listen to, you know, we could fit it all on actual discs. And so that's what we did.
Yeah, that's a fun little track list for the rehearsals, huh?
Absolutely. And hearing the banter between the group as they're rehearsing this stuff is absolutely classic. It's just, you can't help but laugh when you hear how good everybody is getting along, and you get to hear some of the iconic sections come to life right before your ears, literally. Like, you can hear Frank work on the stuff, and you can hear where some of this certain things were birthed, literally. Like, for instance, if you listen to the Roxy version of Inca Roads, and you know that part where George says, "Thank you, honey."
Yeah.
You know, after Ruth plays her little lick, and George says, "Thank you, honey," and everyone laughs. Well, you hear where that comes from in these rehearsals. It's pretty amazing.
So that was not an improvised little bit there. It's just, you know, that's something.
No, it happened in rehearsal, and it made Frank laugh so hard that it ended up becoming something that was being repeated.
Oh, that's phenomenal.
You get to hear more instances of things like that in these rehearsal tapes, which is probably why Frank never recorded over them.
Yeah, because he probably recorded over a lot of stuff like that, right? They were just reference recordings for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's Napoleon at that point? Because he's the new guy. So is he, you know...
Sounds great.
Yeah? I cannot wait.
Sounds great.
When's the release date so that everybody knows?
I think it's like days before Halloween. I'm not exactly sure when the release date is. I think it's like the 27th or something.
Yeah,
or
I was going to say the 26th.
Like
just as a little aside here, folks, the album will be released on October 25th, 2019.
So now we have everybody's favorite fun-filled game show, Your Audience Questions for Joe Travers. And
Hey.
And we're going to start with, and I'm hoping I pronounce everybody's usernames right and all that stuff. You know me, I don't get anything right. From Vudicus. Hi, Vudicus. Vudicus says, I'd like to know about the analog source tapes. What size and speed were the reels? How many tracks? And were there any issues that needed to be addressed with the tapes?
No issues at all, which is obviously makes my life a lot easier. But it's all on Scotch tape from 1973. And that tape stock, that tape formulation from that time period, no problems. It's half inch. Four track, and Craig Parker Adams did the remix, and it's really not much that he could actually do other than balance and you know, of course, treat EQ and stuff like that.
Sure.
But there was a sub mix to two channels. There was two channels which would make a stereo mix. Mm-hmm. And the guy who did the mix in real time was the front of house guy at the time, Brian Crocus. And so, and then channel three probably was an audience. So So and there was no channel four, which is weird. And I've noticed this a lot on those four track tapes is that they didn't even utilize the fourth track on some of these stuff. It's weird. So you've got a stereo mix on channel one and two, and then an audience track on channel three, which is mono.
Yep.
And then nothing on four. And that's what we had to deal with. So the mix that you hear was recorded by Brian Crocus. And then we just kind of refurbished it, made it sound good, balanced it. And that's what you're going to hear.
Interesting. I wonder why they would carry around a four-track machine and then not utilize the fourth track. You'd think you'd want...
I noticed that a lot in the Bongo Fury tapes as well in 75. There's just three tracks being used and not the fourth one.
It's weird. It reminds me of like when I was in a cheesy local band when I was a kid and we had this little cassette four track, but the fourth track simply didn't work. So who knows?
Oh, God.
It wouldn't record anything. from Javier... who is also your friend, Al Fresco on Zapateers.
Sure.
He wants to know, what's the secret word for tonight?
Oh, God. You know, that whole secret word thing, you know, I know that in the 80s, like in 84 and especially in 88, that Secret Word stuff got pretty popular. But I got to be honest with you, man, it's really frustrating to listen to shows when they're just drilling the Secret Word down your throat. I mean, it's just like, wow, the entire show seems to just get sabotaged by a Secret Word, you know what I mean?
Nice, 1984, Nice, France.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, and the Wurzburg show from 88 is just Johnny Cashed to death. I mean, absolute death. Oh my God, it's just it's hard to listen to.
That's true.
So,
you know, I always thought,
yeah,
Keneally sounded more like Mr. Ed than he did Johnny Cage.
Yeah.
Hi, Mike.
Right.
Javier also wants to know, was Steve Desper the field engineer?
No, it was again Brian Crocus.
It was Brian Crocus. Yes.
Steve Desper was in the summer of 73, mm-hmm, and probably the earlier tour too, the tour that was from February through April. I think that was Steve Desper as well.
Yeah, the Ponty tour.
Yes.
Okay. Kind of related to that, also from Javier, what happened with the Australian Live 73 projects to be released by FZ, and why not live recordings with Jean-Luc Ponty 73? Why not issue?
Well, there will be. There will be. Obviously, Road Tapes is one.
Mm-hmm.
But there will be. In fact, the Australian project is something that we can do in the future. The Australian tapes are there. Frank did cut them up a little bit, though.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a little. It's a little bit of a piecing it back together project. But yes, they're all there. They sound great, and that will be something that we'll do in the future.
Okay. This is from Brain Pang, and I assume this refers to the Orchestra Favorites album, so we've already talked about it. Was Captain Beefheart there but left off the tape?
Yeah, it wasn't captured. That's in the liner notes, too.
Yeah. Yeah, because I don't think that has anything to do with Halloween 73. Beefheart wouldn't have been there.
Right. Right.
From Burnt Lumpy Gravy. I don't have any questions pertaining to Halloween that haven't already been asked, but I do hope you will consider these vault-pertaining questions for submission. The beauty of the vault is that you can still find tapes in the vault that you didn't know were there,
yes,
a la, you know, like Halloween 73, for example.
For sure.
That's the beauty of the vault, folks. What are Joe's thoughts about releasing Road Tapes, Warts and All box sets for each year, i.e., all the tapes in the vault from 74, 72, 69, etc., maybe once Halloween sets and special release possibilities are exhausted, then that could be something to consider. I do believe this type of archival releasing has done very well for King Crimson and their fan base, for example.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Well, again, not all the shows are there, and even if the shows are there, they're not complete in the tapes, you know. And then they're either recorded over or Frank would just bring a razor blade to them. So it's a lot more work than they think.
Mm-hmm.
And then also again, I don't think it's going to do the legacy any justice by, you know, serving the fetishists with their ultimate dream of having every tape in the vault available to them. But why have shitty versions of songs that are out there that is bad performances, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that those bands are bad, because they're, you know, they're obviously there's some really strong bands there, and almost everything they did was great.
Mm-hmm.
But there are instances where there's mess ups and stuff like that. And again, I would rather have the opportunity to try to either edit that stuff or fix them before I would let just all that stuff go out on a subscription basis or a box set for cheap. You know what I mean? I don't know. And also, too, I think that the worth of the shows is more than just putting it all out there with zero packaging and just for the people just to be able to have it. You know, I think it's better to find special shows, and we can make the packaging special, and we can present it with the proper promotion and the proper respect instead of just throwing it out there as part of a program to just because it's there.
Yeah. I mean, that I completely agree because, you know, and I'm a Crimson fan. I know you're not particularly a Crimson fan. We've discussed this, but
no, I like them.
Yeah,
I like them. I especially like the Red period, like when Bill Bruford was playing with them. That's my favorite period.
Yeah, you can't really argue with Bruford.
Lark's Tongue and Aspic and that kind of stuff. I like that. Stars. And I like the Great Deceiver box set.
Yeah, that was a hot band, actually.
Yeah, I like that time period.
Yeah, but I think to dump everything out there in one set, it does kind of lose its specialness, and you'd get overwhelmed. You know, I know that, you know, can easily happen. You know, if you throw everything out there at once, it ceases to have the specialness that you would, you know, that one release would have, because then you can really digest that one release. That's my opinion.
Yeah, but I'm also a fan of preparing, you know, multi-sets from a certain year, but it just has to be produced. It has to be produced. It has to go through the machine. It has to go through the chain. You know, it has to be transferred, listened to, corrected, balanced, EQ'd, made listenable. And, you know, there's so many instances where the tape machine just runs out in the middle of a song.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got missing chunks. Mm-hmm. from going from reel two to reel three, and you got to fill that stuff in to make it listenable from another show. So, and not every show sounds the same because of the acoustics of the different venues. So now you have to try and find a place that sounds kind of the same, the mix is kind of the same, so that when it goes from one place to the other, it's not so jarring.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you got to do the best you can. And those are the things that I think about when choosing shows and releases, is that kind of stuff. Say, I know that there's people out there that would just they just want it warts and all. But honestly, I just think that it's better to have it produced and prepared in a certain way, in a proper way, and then put them bundle certain things together for box sets maybe that would have multiple shows in it, but not every single tape, not every single show.
Yeah, I think Halloween 77, even though it's from the same run of shows, is an example of what you can do, you know, if it's done properly.
The thing about that's special is not only is it 24 track, but also because there were two machines running and there was no missing gaps. So Halloween 77, you literally have six complete shows mixed from great sounding sources. With the four track tapes, you don't have that luxury.
No,
you don't have complete shows. You don't have you have missing gaps between reels. You have mixes that, in some cases, are substandard. You know, and so you've got a lot to deal with. It's actually more work to make the road tapes presentable to the public than the multi track tapes, because the multi track tapes sound great, and that's just a matter of letting Craig get his hands on it and mix it, and you know, it's going to sound good. Mm-hmm. But with the road tape stuff, you really have to do a lot of restoration.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of stuff, preparation in order to make it listenable.
Yeah, there's kind of a parallel example of this in the not unofficial world, which is and I don't think I'm telling any tales out of school when I talk about the Birmingham 1969 tape that surfaced earlier this year. That tape has surfaced, but apparently the reels, which were recorded by Don Preston from the stage, are so full of problems of one sort or another that I don't think it's been made available to the wider community. I could be wrong by now, but a lot of work would have had to go into that to make it, you know, decently listenable.
There was always that issue, you know, tape recorders do fail, and speed problems are an issue for sure. And I've run into that on some of these tapes as well, where the machine just decides to go haywire, and the next thing you know, it's off to the races with the tape speed. And that stuff... that stuff is almost unusable.
Yeah. Well, who's going to sit down and really sit and correct, you know, tape speeds that change every 10 seconds or so? Even if it's, you know, minor, it's still, you know.
Yeah.
And how many times have you been listening to a reel of, like, a really good show, and then the reel just runs out, and there's no second reel?
Oh, a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of, yeah, there's a lot of that. Yeah, or... As the reel is getting to the end of the reel and the weight of the tape is getting distributed towards the head, you know, towards the right reel, mm-hmm. then the tape speed changes because of the weight.
Yeah.
You know, some machines couldn't handle it. So that's always a pain in the ass.
God, what a pain in the ass analog was.
It really was. It sounded good, but yeah, it was a hard one.
Mm. Wanna tell you one thing right now. Wanna tell you one thing right here. Wanna tell you about the government. Wanna tell you about the city government. Worldwide government. Everywhere. Tricky. Dicky. Too tricky. Cheating on you. Lying to you. Every day. Every night. In the morning. In the evening. All the time. Every time you think you're telling you the truth. You know it's wrong. You know it's right. You think it's right. You know it's wrong. You think. You dream about the things that's gonna happen, but they never happen because everything is lying to you, cheating to you, trying to tell you what they're gonna do, but never doing what they really say.
Here's a question that I wanted to ask you. When we were talking about quality versus quantity, right, in terms of what you select, and that was very important to Gail also, and I know that because she told me that, this idea of walking the line between, say, putting out a show that, for example, you know that Frank may or may, you know, let's say you have a show that Frank probably would not have put out himself, but it doesn't, you know, it kind of walks that line where it's a necessary and needed product, but it doesn't distort the intent of the composer, which is... You know, Gail used to talk to me about her job was to protect the intent of the composer. So is that a big consideration with you these days?
Well, I think so.
Yeah.
I think that that goes with the whole thing about doing the legacy justice, you know, mm-hmm. because already we're walking a fine line by releasing anything that we know Frank didn't release.
Yeah.
Because had he liked it, he would have.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Frank never released full shows, and we know that there's a market for that.
Yep.
And so anything by the Petite Wazoo is walking a fine line because he never released anything from that band.
Yeah.
But we've proven that there's been some things that he's worked on with the tapes that were releasable and that was received well. I mean, if you listen to Imaginary Diseases and Little Dots, we know that there's great things there that I'm glad is available to the people that want to hear it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, I guess it's kind of Ahmed and myself's job to make that decision. And so I think we've been doing the right things so far.
Yeah. So you know, another way of looking at it is you wouldn't release anything that you think Frank would actively hate being out there.
Well, it's hard to know what he would hate.
That's true.
I didn't really know him that well, and so yeah. I can only look at his work ethic and see the things that he did and that he got his hands on and what he didn't. So
mm-hmm.
that's a sure sign.
Yeah. We got a little sidetracked. Burnt Lumpy Gravy had a couple more questions. Will there be any more releases from the Petite Wazoo era in the future? Can there be?
Yes, there will be.
Oh, okay. So that's a yes.
Yes, that's a yes.
Does Joe happen to know if there is a recording of the only King Kong performance from the 79 band in Hanover, Germany in the vault? It's quite possibly my favorite FZ solo ever.
Huh. Well, if those tapes are in the vault, they would be on half-inch 4-track.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. They probably, I don't know if it's there or not, so I can't mm-hmm. answer it.
Yeah. Oh, and he's got one more, but we've covered this in other shows. Will the 200 Motels soundtrack ever get an updated release through UMG? Well, we don't know.
I sure hope so.
Yeah. It can. It can happen.
It can. That's right. The anniversary is coming up, so that's a clue.
Yeah, that's
a clue. But you never know. I mean, you know, it's a lot of paperwork probably to make that happen, but it's not like it can't be done. I mean, obviously it was done in 1997 when Ryko, licensed it and released it. So hopefully we'll see that day again.
What did they use for tapes on that release?
They got the original analog tapes from MGM.
Oh, really? So that came right off the original analog. Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but Dr. Toby Mountain did the mastering for that stuff.
Yeah, the mastering was a little weird.
I'm not exactly sure what he did there, but he definitely had access to the analog masters for sure.
Yeah, I don't know if there's ever been a really great sounding version of the 200 Motels soundtrack, and just my opinion. You know, they were all
strange. It's kind of one of the least sonically pleasing records Frank ever released. Say there was some interesting stuff going on in 1971 at Whitney Studios with Frank and Barry Keane.
Yeah.
There was just a sound that was coming out of that studio that you can hear on the Fillmore album, you know, the Fillmore E71, the white album.
Yeah.
You can hear it there. You can hear it in 200 Motels. You can hear it in some of the mixes, in the vintage mixes that are coming out from around that time.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a sound that was coming out of that studio that was real, I don't know, interesting is a word to use to describe it.
Lo-fi?
I don't know. It's weird. But that being said, you know, Barry Keane was a good engineer, and Just Another Band from L.A. is a great-sounding album.
Yeah.
And the way that was recorded was pretty special, I guess. You know, it wasn't recorded with the way that things are recorded nowadays. So, and it sounds pretty damn good. So, Whitney Studios in 1971 and early 72 was, there was some weird sounds coming out of there.
Yeah. Let's see. Here's one from, I think it's Quezon's Chicken. Will there be a physical release with just the CDs and not the Halloween costume detritus? Now, you say detritus, I say tomato. But I like that stuff.
There is going to be the box set, which will have everything on CD with the mask. There'll be a single CD highlights version if you don't want to spend the money on that.
Mm-hmm.
You will have access to the entire box set's contents digitally on Spotify, Amazon, Tidal, all your favorite streaming music services will have it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way that it's going to be.
Yep. So there's your configurations, folks.
Yep.
Here's some from Cyrano DB in the United States. Will we ever get to read liner notes from Chester, and have the Fowler brothers been asked to comment on future releases?
I'm thinking that all of the above is possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all of the above is possible. It's whether or not those guys would want to do it.
Yeah.
But we haven't reached out. We haven't reached out specifically to them yet.
Okay. But there are all manner of future releases where that's possible. Everybody's around.
Sure.
You know, it could happen. He went on to say, I love Ralph and Ruth, of course, but it'd be great from others who are a part of this. Do you or the ZFT still stay in touch with Napoleon Murphy Brock?
I do not. And I know that Amit has been in touch with them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's around.
Yep. You'll probably see him in conjunction with some project of some sort at some point. Possibly. Could any historical George Du comments be part of liner notes in the future? It's an interesting question.
Oh, I mean, yeah, of course. I mean, if you wanted to quote George from the multitude of interviews that he's done about Frank over the years, sure, that's possible.
Yeah.
Yep.
And moving from that, does a tape exist of when Frank sat in with the Jean-Luc Ponty Experience with the George Duke Trio?
Haven't found anything like that.
Okay. How much contact do we know about between George and Frank between the time when he sat in with this trio and the filming of 200 Motels? Well, he was actually in the band for close to a year before 200 Motels. So, you know, things moved somewhat quickly after that first, you know, those first experiences. Will the Record Store Day releases and the birthday bundle releases be made available for FLAC or MP3 download in the future?
I don't know.
Possibly. Let's see. Okay. From number 1823, also in the United States. Hey Joe, excited for this new release. On a related note, as tied to this era, is the Road Tape series done? And again, related, have you guys thought about a download-only series? I think we talked about that. Maybe stuff that sound quality-wise might not be up to snuff, but still quite good enough for the hardcore. Well, we answered that part. But is Road Tapes done?
The Road Tape series, Halloween 73 is technically part of it because it's the same kinds of tapes that we would use for that series. But I think that question is something that Amit should answer.
Okay.
I don't really know the state of the actual Road Tape series itself as being called it as such, but that doesn't mean that the releases that would be Road Tapes worthy is going to not happen because Halloween 73 is part of that. So,
okay. Yeah. Cause you know, technically that's a Road Tape. Basically those are Road Tapes.
Right.
Now here's a question from TPS. And the question is, how the hell does Joe ever get any work done surrounded by such a treasure trove of tapes?
Well, it's a good thing I started early.
Yeah. Where was your, like, so-called hardcore knowledge at in 95 when you started with the tapes?
I knew a lot. I knew a lot, but obviously I've learned so much more by, you know, hearing the stuff that I've heard in the vault. But I definitely knew a lot, but I remember that once I began doing the Vaultmeister job, the first project that I wanted to do was document the Petite Wazoo tapes. That was the first thing that I wanted to do.
So that's what you went for. You went looking for those tapes first.
That was the first thing I went for.
Were they buried?
No, they were all right there, right in front of my eyes.
Wow, that's awesome. John, who you know, John Singleton from Liverpool, he got up and danced with you guys at one of the shows in England on the hologram tour. We talked about that. Hi, John.
Hey.
He basically asked that same question. Can we have a European version of the new Halloween 73 release? Just the music. It's available on streaming services, so there's the answer to that. And here's from a username yet another, and I think I could probably take this one. Will the Rage and the Fury ever get released? Amit talked about that in a previous episode, and the answer is yes, when the time is right, and the time will be right, according to Amit, when everybody is kind of available to, you know, put it out there. And so that's kind of the answer to that question.
A good point about that. I mean, yes, I would love to see that come out because it's essential. It's not Frank's music.
That's true.
That right there makes it its own. It's a special case.
Thank you. We'll move over to the Zappa.com forum, and this question is from the forum killed RK. The question is, when mixing, does Joe see himself between big production and documentarian? Does he only fix tape problems with baking, etc., then balance the faders using high-quality equipment, of course? How's about other things such as panning and depth perspective, compression, EQ, reverb, delay, etc.?
It's all a team effort between me and Greg Parker Adams.
Mm-hmm.
So I do all of the documentation and the preparation of the master files.
Mm-hmm.
All of the you know, the tape baking, tape transfers and preparation, so that I can just hand over edited master files to Craig. Craig will do the mixing and I will supervise it.
Okay.
So the final product is, you know, gone through, you know, Craig and myself for mm-hmm. sure.
Now, do you get the final sonic okay on
yeah.
the result? Okay.
Right.
Just to make that clear for folks.
Yep.
This is from Ill Ugly 3. So, hi, Kill Ugly 3. Howdy, Scott and Joe. How are the marketing and packing... How are the marketing and packaging decisions made regarding this and other releases? I personally like the masks and other creative packaging, but others have been critical, wishing for more bare bones releases at a lower price. Keep up the good work.
Nice. That's all a team effort.
Mm-hmm.
I will submit to the person that we work with, Mike Mesker, who does a lot of the design work. Mm-hmm. And Amit is a team effort there with design work and ideas. And again, I will submit pictures, articles, stuff to beef the package up.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, I'll also help suggest liner notes. I'll write my own liner notes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a team effort amongst Amit, myself, Mike, and our production manager Melanie.
Yeah.
It's all kind of like we all kind of work together.
Awesome. One more question from Kill Ugly 3. What's next? Well, we can't tell you in this episode. We will next time, though. And
stay tuned.
Stay tuned. It's big, folks. And are there going to be any Blu-ray audio releases in the future? It's an interesting one.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I want to do them, and it's just we'll just have to see how that all pans out.
Yeah, we've
but
had
I,
this
I
conversation.
Would like to,
yeah.
I especially would like to see the multi-channel mixes in the vault come out on Blu-ray audio. That would be great.
Yeah. There's a fair amount of multi-channel audio stuff that can be done.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, there is, for sure.
This is from Tink Amok. Hi, Scott and Joe. Hi, Tink. Is there a good quality video recording of the 88 band that could be released on Blu-ray? Regards to you both, and thank you for most excellent work. Well, thank you.
One thing that you guys need to know, if anyone cares to know, is that Blu-ray coming from video is like cheating the customer.
Mm.
Most Blu-rays are made from film sources.
Yeah.
So anything from a video source, it's like taking a 44.1 16-bit CD and upsampling it to 96K 24-bit and saying that it's high res.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So a lot of the stuff from the 88 band in the vault is all shot on video. There's very, very little on film. Very little.
Okay.
So most of the stuff in the 88 world is on video. Therefore, having a Blu-ray of it would be... You know, I guess, I don't know if Blu-ray is the right format for something like that. I think that DVD would probably be more likely, only because everything was shot in video, you know?
Yeah.
But there's not enough stuff. There is an 88 project that we could do that would be a good compilation of the stuff that we have in the vault. But we can't release full shows. Like, we wouldn't be able to release the full... shows that we have, which we don't really have many at all. We've only got a few.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, that would not be the case. But I think that a compilation would be something to really pay tribute to that band putting together. That's one of the projects I would love to see happen in the future, is to take the existing 88 footage in the vault and kind of do a cool compilation, edit it together a certain way.
Yeah.
And make it a cool, yeah, that'd be really cool.
I would love it, because, you know, if you take an example like Barcelona, which is the classic one, and I think Madrid also exists in the vault.
Yep.
Those have to be cleared with the respective TV networks, correct?
I think so, yeah. I don't know what the original contracts would be, but obviously they supplied Frank with a master.
Yep.
So, who knows?
Yeah.
But again, Barcelona is you know, dealing with a man, dealing with the secret word syndrome.
Yeah.
So not all of it is completely releasable, and I don't really know too much about the Madrid show other than the fact that the video is tainted with really cheesy, shitty effects that ruined the presentation.
Oh, really?
Somebody's idea of a good time was to do all sorts of different video effects and stuff, and it's really hard to watch.
Ah, that's a shame.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that Barcelona show is secret word of go-go, so you can't imagine, like, what the people at home who didn't know what was going on thought of this. All right, here's a question from the ZappaCast Facebook page. We do have a Facebook page, folks. If you're not on it, go get on it. We have cool stuff there, too. From Jim Rare, were there any challenges with the tapes themselves for this release? We talked a little bit about that.
Yep, no challenges there. Everything played great, and the only challenge was not having the luxury of being able to alter the mix outside of what's there.
Yep.
But what's there sounds really good. So.
Yeah. Okay. Here's an interesting question: is there any insight? Can you give us any insight on why the specific rehearsal selections were picked over other rehearsals for this tour or other unique performances from this tour as the bonus disc?
I wanted to add more material to make this box set a little beefier in content.
Mm-hmm.
And I did happen to run over these reels of tape that were recorded, like, literally right before the first city, which was Austin, Texas, on the tour.
Yeah.
And when I listened to them, there was such great stuff on the tapes, and there was enough content to make a disc's worth of stuff just from the three or four reels of tape that I found that were rehearsal tapes. Because it was period perfect, it made total sense to be able to just say, okay, this is a window in time. We've got these Halloween shows here, and literally, like, earlier in the month, we've got these rehearsal tapes, and so why not bundle them together to make a beefy package, to make it something worthwhile.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a great idea.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about the good humor and the camaraderie between the band members making this tape kind of special.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Is there any chance that we will hear more material from the Chicago 1974 show that was used on the Roxy and Elsewhere album, as well as the Off and Raw History of the Mothers?
Yes.
That can happen.
Yes.
That's an easy one.
Yep.
Let's see. Okay, we talked a little bit about this, but this is from Aubrey Seaton in Texas. Why pick this particular year for the next of these Halloween shows? What do these shows tell us that the Roxy Box doesn't? And we talked a little bit about that.
Well, regardless of the Roxy Box, and regardless of any 73 shows that we would choose to release, this is about Halloween.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why. I mean, we have some other years in the vault of Halloween that we could have picked from, but it just made sense that that this would be a perfect, because we have it. I mean, again, we don't have certain years in the vault. So the fact that we even have these shows is a big deal in the vault. And it's the perfect thing for the Halloween series. So we just went with it because we're still in the process of preparing the rest of the other Halloween years, because it's a mammoth task.
Yeah.
And this one was not as mammoth of a task, because it was only two shows and it was only three tracks of audio to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't extremely hard to put this release together. It wasn't unbelievably time consuming like the rest of them will be.
So it was kind of a quick release, as it were. Not bad for two shows.
Yeah, kind of.
Relatively.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is from Ed Kamara, who's a good friend of mine. Hi, Ed, up in New York. His first question is, hey, Joe, where are you going with that gun in your hand?
And if only I had $5 for every time someone said that to me in my life, I would retire.
It says in parentheses, then again, he may hear that a lot. Ask at your own risk, it says.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't talked about Joe's gun, folks. We've talked about Warren's before. Let's see.
Sound me by the tits and bucks. Also in the cookie with a cold wind face down. Twirl and come back to make it go snappy when I pop it up you. All the time recording your whippers and grunts on my sodium cassette machine. For all the guys in the bank.
A more serious question. What would be the project object conceptual continuity for the Halloween 1973 shows? I think we just answered that one, but the
yeah, pretty much
the
yeah.
threat is Halloween, because his point was that Frank chose not to release material from these shows on any of the albums, including the stage series. But
the thing about the stage series is that Frank prioritized all of the best sounding options from the vault, because he was such a stickler for that. So in other words, almost every single thing that you hear on the stage series all comes from multi-track sources.
Mm.
And the road tapes really just didn't apply, because it didn't sound good enough for him sonically to make it work. And here's another thing about the stage series that people should know. The history of the You Can't Do That on Stage Anymore series starts back with what people may know, the Impossible Concert.
Mm-hmm.
And the Impossible Concert is something that Frank was experimenting with back in like 75-ish, 75, I think. It was. Yeah, definitely around then, 75. I know that for sure. And the reason why I bring that up is because the Impossible Concert implies that it's impossible, because there's no way that that concert could have happened in real life, because you're cutting from different bands, different shows, different sources. But one of the things that make it impossible is the fact that sonically it's working as a full unit.
Ah.
And so he's taking that in consideration, not just the fact that the performances are all special and need to be, you know, put on a pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, just like if you listen to, this was something that Frank always took in consideration when making these records. And if you listen to Volume 5, Disc 2, mm-hmm. of the, which is that the 82 Italian shows,
yep.
mostly, right? And then if you listen to The Best Band, and you listen to Make a Jazz Noise Here, and you listen to Broadway the Hard Way, what you'll notice is he's cutting from cities all over the place, even in the middle of songs. You know, songs are being cut from multiple cities. But when you listen to the record, for the most part, on the whole, it all sounds seamless sonically.
Yes.
Maybe you'll hear an edit. You know, maybe you'll hear an edit here or two. But ultimately, same band, different cities, different same recording engineers. Therefore, the sounds to the tapes are pretty consistent, so that when you make a record, it doesn't sound like you're jumping from one thing to another. It sounds like it's like all from one show.
Mm-hmm.
Thereby, so that's where the Impossible Concert kind of approach comes into play. So when you're looking at, you can't do that on stage anymore, he's jumping from one year to the next, one city to the next, one venue to the next, one type of format of tape to the next. But in order for it to sonically work, he really prioritized anything from the 24-track tapes or the 48-track tapes in the case of 88 Band. But, you know, he didn't really pull from the 4-track tapes because sonically they're just so different sounding than anything that was recorded on 16-track or up.
Yeah.
So that was a factor in that stage series, was seamlessly, sonically making it all work, you know? That's a long-winded way of saying that's one of the reasons why the road tapes probably weren't contenders for any of the stage series, is because sonically they weren't up to par, and he really wanted that series to sound good. He wanted it to sound professional, like it's coming from the right shit.
Yeah. Well, there you go, Ed. You got a really good answer to that question. I got a few more. This is from Aaron Bolansky, my friend. Hi, Aaron. Can I ask a more general 1973 question? Great. Thanks, Scott. Well, you're assuming that Joe's going to answer it, Aaron. is there anything else unusual or special or noteworthy lurking in the vault from 1973? If so, can you describe it? Yes and no?
Well, yeah, there's amazing stuff from 1973 in the vault. Obviously, the Australian stuff is that's a big deal.
Yep.
And there's a lot of shows from the earlier tour, the February, March, April stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of tapes in there. And obviously that band's got Sal Marquez in it, along with Jean-Luc Ponty and Ian Underwood. So great stuff there. And then there's more shows from this Halloween 73 lineup, which is in the vault, which is good. And there's also some tapes, some additional tapes from the European leg of the 73 band when Jean-Luc Ponty and Ian was in it, but Sal wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically the Road Tapes 2 time period, which was taped in Helsinki, Finland in 73.
Yeah.
So there's other tapes from that European run in the vault as well, but they're hit and miss as far as sonics are concerned. Mm-hmm. Some of them don't sound as good as others, because I remember Kerry McNabb telling me that the console that he had to work with on that tour was dismal. It was really, really, really hard to deal with. It was noisy and crackly, and it was hard for him to get decent sounding tape recordings from that time period. But obviously they're very historical, so yet that's, you know, a motivation for some of that stuff to be heard. But so 73 is well documented, and there are definitely more opportunities in our future for more material from that time to be featured. But we don't want to saturate the market with just that year. As strong as that year was, and as much material that we do have in the vault from that time period, we're not going to just only have 73 being shoved down everybody's throats. I mean, we got to get to 75, 76.
Mm-hmm.
We got to get to the 80s. The 80s is, you know, got to get an 88 show out there soon.
I agree. I'm really a big fan of that band.
Yep.
Here's one from Ed Taylor. Hi, Ed. Can they tease us with any information on what might be on the Alex Winter Zappa Doc soundtrack? I don't know.
No, there's nothing I can say about that, but I will say that the movie is just so good.
Yeah.
I've seen work cuts, work rough cuts and work versions, and it's just great. I can't wait for that. It's going to be really good.
Yeah. Is there going to be a soundtrack, or are you at liberty to divulge that?
No, there will be a soundtrack. Yes, will be.
So big time, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Going big time with that one. And here's one last one. This is from Hakan Tuna. Hi, Hakan. Just one more question. Can I ask for more Synclavier, please?
Yes, there will be more Synclavier. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you have to take that off of tapes, obviously, you know, just in case anybody hasn't heard previous episodes where we've talked about this. You can't just go into the Synclavier and remove extract compositions from it.
We only can use the stuff that's been mixed or that has been documented on multi-track tape.
Mm. Is there tons of that stuff?
Yeah, there's a lot.
Yeah.
There is a lot. Yep. Yeah.
So that's going to do it for this episode, folks, but we're going to be back probably in about a week or so.
because we got more things to talk about.
We do. We got some big stuff to talk about. So we'll be doing that and getting your questions in, and you know, we're going to have our usual sort of fun on the ZappaCast, ladies and gentlemen. So
in the meantime, happy Halloween to everybody. And I hope you all have a great holiday. And it's a special time to be able to listen to unreleased Halloween Zappa shows during Halloween. So I hope everybody enjoys their trick-or-treating. Great holiday, and be careful trick-or-treating out there, people.
It is 2019, folks. You never know what's going to be in the candy basket. Okay. Speaking of candy baskets...
All right, Scott.
We'll have more for you soon. Thank you, Joe.
Yes. Thank you, Scott. And I look forward to talking to you soon.
All right. I'll be talking to you shortly.
Great.
All right. Have a good night.
Thanks.
All right. All right. Bye.
Bye.
And that's our show. The ZappaCast was produced and edited by Scott Parker. Production assistance by Joe Travers and Melanie Starks. This podcast and all of the musical selections contained therein are copyrighted worldwide by the Zappa Family Trust. All rights reserved. Big thanks to Ahmed Zappa and all at Zappa.com. On behalf of the ZappaCast team, this is Scott Parker saying thank you for listening. And until next time, good night, boys and girls.
It's been lovely working for you this evening. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night. Good night.